What are you worried about? They're only toys. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that loves the smell of polyurethane in the morning. Now, as any good film fan should know, Joe Dante began his career cutting trailers for exploitation king Roger Corman. His job was to cut together the most exciting parts of the film, and famously, if there weren't enough exciting moments, he'd edit in a shot of an exploding helicopter from a completely unrelated film. Given his understanding of the marketing power of a chopper fireball, it's surprising then that Dante has only made one film in his entire career that features an exploding helicopter, and naturally, that's the film we're talking about today, 1998's Small Soldiers. To discuss the film, I'm joined by a man where some assembly is required and batteries have not been included. It's returning champion, Nick Rehack. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me back, Will.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. Now, we are talking about a Joe Dante film here, and this was a film that you were very keen to do. So I'm guessing that you must be some sort of Dante fan. So is that correct? And what is it about his films that you like in particular?
So actually, it's not because I'm a Joe Dante fan, although I did enjoy the work he did, obviously, with Gremlins. Everybody enjoys that. Very much enjoyed The Howling. I didn't know that he kind of secretly directed Rock and Roll High School, but I enjoyed that as well, and some of the stuff he's done with The Twilight Zone. But when I was a kid, I watched this movie a lot. I was a very, very big fan of this movie. And as I haven't rewatched it in years, but as I rewatched it for this podcast, I'm starting to wonder, A, why my parents ever let me watch this movie at such a young age, and B, what did I ever find enjoyable about this movie at such a young age? This was very different from what I remember as a kid growing up.
Ooh, interesting. So you've done a big turnaround then on this film.
A very big turnaround, yeah, because here I'm expecting a little more humor and charm and kind of tongue-in-cheek, and that is not happening in this movie to the point where, I mean, we're just – plug in a couple swear words and the film's rated R, you know, like it is no joke. And I'm wondering who the audience is, you know, truly.
Okay. Well, hold those thoughts, Nick, hold those thoughts. We're going to have plenty of time to get stuck into them, unravel them, unpick them, and you can exercise these issues that you're bringing up from your youth here. But before we start psychoanalyzing you, I think it's time to get a little flavor of the film. So let's listen to an expository voiceover. Fill us in on the plot.
Globotech Defense Systems. In a secret lab, the world's most advanced military microprocessor has been created. But the Cold War is over. For Globotech to survive, new markets must be found. Now, all that power has been placed into the brain of a fighting machine unlike any known to man. They made it strong. They made it clever. They made it small. They made a mistake.
Tail! Commandos, attack!
I'm talking about toys that are so smart, when kids play with them, they play back.
Chip Hazard, reporting for duty.
You put munitions chips in toys?
Big action.
Oh my god, I'm having an aneurysm.
Big trouble.
Last chance, scum.
Oh yeah?
Medic!
Big movie.
They might be
defective. What are you packing, Tiny?
Packing you.
Small soldiers.
You'd have to be crazy not to be scared.
When a teenage boy buys a set of Commando Elite action figures, he's unaware that they have been programmed with cutting-edge military technology. After the toys spring to life, they start putting their programming into effect and begin killing their enemy, another series of toys called the Gorgonites. As the conflict between the warring toys escalates, our young teenage hero finds himself fighting for his life against these pint-sized plastic paramilitaries. In the on-screen cast, we have Kirsten Dunst, Kevin Dunn, Dennis Leary, Phil Hartman, Robert Picardo, and of course, Dick Miller. Doing voice work in this film, we have Tommy Lee Jones, Ernest Borgnine, Frank Langella, Bruce Dern, George Kennedy, Christina Ricci, and Sarah Michelle Gellar. This film got mixed reviews on its release, and that's reflected, I guess, in its user score on IMDb, which is currently 6.2, and it has a similar score of 3.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd. It did turn a profit at the box office, making $87 million worldwide off a budget of $40 million. And there was more money made elsewhere, as the film had tie-in deals with Burger King, a toy deal with Kenner, a soundtrack album, and a tie-in computer game. So with all of that out of the way, Nick, what did you make of Small Soldiers?
Well, I had a fondness for it going into the film. It's like I said, I watched it a whole lot as a kid. But as I watched the movie after not having seen it for, you know, years, I wondered why I liked it. There's no real likable characters in this film except for Kristen Dunst's character and maybe David Cross's character. Everybody is just mean-spirited. Everybody is just – they yell at each other all the time. Hardly is there like genuine dialogue unless it's between, you know, Jacob Smith and Kirsten Dunst. And I mean – oh, excuse me, not Jacob Smith. Gregory Smith, the kid that plays Alan, between him and Kristen's character. Like it's so off-putting. And then in come the Gorgonites or the Gorgons, and they're just like, hey, we're just hanging out like a bunch of hippies. And then all of a sudden, here come the military guys, and immediately it just ramps up into just this absurd violence. And then the entire time I'm watching it, I'm like, does no one else live in this town? Are there no other neighbors? Like, the neighbors, at some point, music is being just blasted at high volumes, and the neighbors are like, oh, it's the Fimples again, and they just close the window. They don't bother to look outside. Like, after a while, I'm like, this is just absurd. But then I realize, well, it's toys that are talking and having artificial talent, so of course it's absurd. But I just remember it being more fun as a kid, and this film, to me, just isn't fun. It's more of like, oh, I get that reference, or oh, I see where they got that idea, or oh, hey, cool, George Kennedy is talking. I want to listen to what he's saying.
It's an interesting point that you make about this film, because I think I'm perhaps in similar territory to yourself, though, you know, maybe in a different coming at it from a different direction, because on paper, I think this film has a lot of ingredients that should work. Like, it's satirizing certain elements of American culture. It is got a kind of ingenious like premise. You know, what if military technology was put into children's toys and these things came to life and started attacking us? And it's so this film feels like a really fun idea, with a clever kind of satirical bent to it. That kind of is territory that Joe Dante has worked in previously. Like, so he would seem a great director to be helming this film, but somehow there's like some magic secret sauce that is just missing from this film. I don't feel that I can see all the elements are there, yet it doesn't really sort of come to life. I do think you've definitely hit on something about the characters. I don't really care about the characters. I don't think it's because there's bad acting there. I don't think it's necessarily the bad writing. There's just something missing. I don't know whether, I mean, do you think it's a casting issue? Do you think it's a script issue? Like, what is it about the characters that kind of mean, would different actors have made this film work a bit better, do you think?
I don't think it's the acting so much as it's the writing. I think there's, well, you know what? I think it's a combination of the writing and the acting. I think some of the writing comes from who's writing it. That's the stupidest thing to say ever, but you know what I'm getting at. You have Ted Elliott and Terry Rozio, or Ted and Terry as I like to call them. They've written most of the Shrek films, a handful of the Pirates of the Caribbean films. They did the animated Aladdin. They've done a lot of films that toe that line. They're geared more towards children or young adults in a sense, but there's humor in there for everybody across the board, and there's charm to them. But with this, we're missing that charm. Now, I don't know what Adam Rifkin and Gavin Scott have done previously, but I'm wondering if maybe there was a weird combination of the two, and somehow that charm just got lost. Because the action is there. There's no doubt about that. But the characters behind it, it just doesn't – it doesn't work for me. And I don't know exactly what it is because the actors themselves are great. I've always enjoyed Jay Moore and David Cross whenever they show up in something. Dennis Leary is fine. Kevin Dunn, it's always cool to see him. Obviously, Phil Hartman. Phil Hartman, they don't even use him to the extent that they could have. Phil Hartman is hilarious. But in this, he just comes across as like malicious. Not like a satirical, as in like, he's one of those Keeping Up with the Joneses guys, where he is the Joneses in this case. But it just – all of it across the board feels like something's missing. Like the only nice guy in here is Dick Miller, the guy that plays Joe, the delivery driver. He's the only nice person. Everybody else is just so in their own world or just too busy yelling at each other. Or they don't trust each other. They don't believe each other. There's just so much negativity around it that when it comes time to have fun and be goofy with the characters, I'm like – or the toys and everything, I'm like, you know what? Kind of over this already. And the ratio and the balance just doesn't work out sometimes. It just doesn't hit, and I genuinely think it's because it's missing that charm.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Nick. There's definitely a charm which we've seen in other Joe Dante films, which is absent from this film. And, you know, as with many of Joe Dante's other films, there's subversive elements in Small Soldiers, and this film's no exception. And there was very clearly a commentary in this film on, say, the militarization of American culture and the glorification of war. There's a critique of the dangers of unchecked corporate power, and presciently, or certainly very topically at least, there are ethical questions in this film about the use of artificial intelligence and the responsibility of humans for the actions of autonomous machines. So, I mean, how do you feel those kind of subversive elements landed in Small Soldiers, especially, you know, as you were coming at it from kind of a perspective of having watched it as a child, where I guess some of those elements might have gone over your head, and then coming to view it as an adult, where I'm assuming you just sort of you were able to spot them all.
Yeah, exactly that. As a kid, all of it went over my head, like every last bit of it. But as I'm older watching this, I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Or like you said with the AI, very topical. And then oftentimes I wonder to myself, what would it have been if this film came out in the last 5 years, especially with cell phone technology? How much further would the toys have gotten? Would it have become a worldwide scale type thing with nuclear war and stronger possibilities? It's done well, and it's done in subtle ways, but they're also obvious at the same time. Like, they don't come flat out and say, you know, like you said, you know, American culture becoming more militarized or anything like that, but you just see it, and they lay it on thicker and thicker and thicker until finally you're in the throes of it, and you're like, man, what are we doing here? Like, they even get to like the point where they're Frankensteining the Gwendy dolls. It just gets more and more intense. All the vehicles that they've done, the way they're able to kind of MacGyver everything together, none of it is for like fun. All of it's for like the intense and very real purpose of just trying to destroy. And even in the beginning, right, with Archer's like, they're not going to show mercy. It's like, there will be no mercy. There will be no mercy. And he's right. Like, it is just nonstop. They're coming at you. And I like to think that the American military is not very much like that. But if you look at our history and some of the things that we've gotten into, I mean, even when the commando set up the speakers and they're blasting the Spice Girls, the mom, one of the moms is like, oh, yeah, the Marines did this to Noriega. It's like, oh, so so it's the truth is not at all stranger than fiction at this point. Like, this is just – but it's something else, and it's something that as I've gotten older, I've begun to appreciate more and more of the subtleties and most of the messages behind films. But with this one, it comes through, but I don't think it comes through to a point where it's obnoxious and in your face. Mm. Like, if you sit back and go, oh, yeah, they talk about – like, this is what the film's about. You're like, oh, yeah, I guess that is the point. And then you have a conversation, and then you go on to something else. It's not like it's stuck with you so hard and you come out of the film like, oh, I can't believe it. Why does every Hollywood film have to have a message and blah, blah, blah? Like, it's not that nonsense. It's very much a like, oh, no, I get what they're going for.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's just there in the background. So it's something that you can see that is woven through the DNA of the film. But some of it is very on the nose, I guess. You know, you've got, as you were saying, you know, Joe Dante, you know, is often likes making nods or references to other films. So you've got a kind of you know, there's a scene in this film where Chip Hazard, it's you know, clear parody of the film Pattern, and George S. Scott's kind of great sort of monologue that opens the film. But then there's notes of that sort of satirical edge that are sort of a little bit more, you know, deeply woven into the film, which I appreciated. So the fact that, you know, you've got his Alan's dad runs this toy shop where he doesn't sell any sort of toys that are sort of related to war, because, you know, he doesn't feel that's appropriate for children. But his toy shop's very unsuccessful. So it's kind of, I like, which they don't make a big play of that particular point, but it's just there to sort of show, I guess, that, yeah, if you don't, you know, violence or action, as Dennis Leary advises us that we should call it in this film, you know, sells, and that's where the money is.
Yeah, essentially, because even the kid notices that, and he's, you know, you would think that he's not as business savvy as his father is, but clearly the kid's like, well, we're going to make some money, and we're going to do it kind of doing what everybody else is doing, and that's selling these toys and selling what the people want. The people want this action. They want all that. And it makes me wonder, too, not trying to get like political or whatever, but had this film come out 4 years, 5 years later in 2002, 2003, after September 11th, and while we're in the throes of everything that's going on, would this have been changed in any kind of way to where the commandos look more like the good guys instead of the Gorgonites looking like the bad guys in this? To keep with that idea of, hey, you know, the military, we're the good guys, we're going to go fight the fight, and we're going to take on these, you know, invaders, these creatures from wherever. And instead, these guys are just chill. They're like, hey, we just want to hang out and learn, you know? But I don't understand where the idea where they have to hide comes from. Because I feel like in the initial pitch, when David Cross and Jay Moore's character are talking to Dennis Leary, they're just like, oh, yeah, you know, they're going to learn and do this. And then immediately he changes to, like, well, they hide. And that's all they do. And then if every so often they're like, oh, yeah, we learn. And Archer reminds us of that when he's fighting Chip on the power pole. He's like, oh, we also learn. And it's like, okay. All right. He's like, you're programmed to lose. You're going to do this. He's like, yeah, but we learn. Okay. And you hide? Like, that's not really exciting. And it becomes hard to root for those guys other than looking at it and going, oh, the commandos are a bunch of jerks. Like, that's why you don't really root for them all the time, because they're jerks. Like, they're just mean. So I don't understand. Like, I don't understand that part, you know?
Yeah. There's quite a lot of it's quite a dark film in quite a few places, isn't it? Because there's the sort of scenes of toy on toy torture. And they do. I mean, Alan gets attacked with I don't know what that is. It's some sort of cutting tools. Gets a nasty sort of cut on his hands. Some of the Phil Hartman and his wife get drugged asleep. Various other people get you know, captured by the toys at some point. And it's I mean, this film did get I think got PG-13 rating as a subsequent, but it's there's sort of a surprising amount of sort of like quite dark stuff in it, which gets overlooked, I think, because it's being perpetrated by toys and in a film which is like in inverted commas comedic.
Yeah, especially when like it takes a hard turn around the hour mark when the soldiers, all of them, see the Gwendy dolls and they're like, hey, this is great. You know, I mean, they're talking about like, let's get some R&R, some leave time, here we go. But what does Chip say? Bring me the body of the guy that just died, and proceeds to not only pop his head off in front of the other guys, but remove his skin, crack open his skull, and then take the microchip in order to start changing up all these Gwendy dolls. I'm watching this like, oh my God. Like, this is like a super intense Frankenstein where instead of ripping somebody's brain out, he just gets the microchip. And then I'm also thinking, like, what the hell kind of programming do these things have to where they would know and have such awareness that you know what I mean, that the chip's in there like that. And it's just it became so disturbing to me that he just ripped it open like it was nothing. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And the other guys, like, just out of fear. That's how this guy is controlling and ruling them. Not because it's a military thing and you respect the rank. After a while, it's fear. The one guy has a cigar in his mouth and he drops it.
Well, in this film, we've got the bad guys, I guess, are sort of most simplistically the commando elite, these toys. But you know, behind them, we have this sort of inverted commas evil corporation that's headed up by Dennis Leary, which is called Globotech, which is Dick Miller's employer. And you know, they're talking about how they kind of, you know, they've come out of military, they're getting into toys, you know, they're going to basically take over everything. And there was one, in terms of that unchecked corporate power message, Nick, there was one line in the film which I thought would really strike a chord with you, because you know, Dick Miller is warning about how Globotech is taking over you know, everything. And you know, he says the consequences of that are going to be goodbye microbreweries. What did you make of that, Nick?
As soon as he said that, I was like, yeah, he's got a point. It's all going to go macro. But then another part of me was like, it was kind of cool in 98 that one random guy was like, yeah, I go to this local spot. I don't necessarily go to the local bar and get whatever Anheuser-Busch is pushing out. Like, I'm going to go to Fred's and see what kind of ale he's whipping up. So in a way, it's like weirdly progressive at the same time, because I feel like craft hasn't really exploded like it has. And maybe the last decade it's really taken off. But he said that and I was like, oh, yeah, I like this guy. I like Joe.
Now, given the some of the themes in this film, but, you know, particularly its critique of corporate power and corporate cynicism, I found it very ironic to learn that Small Soldiers had tie-in soundtrack, a range of kids' toys that were going to be marketed through Burger King, along with four tie-in computer games. And it reminded me all of that old William Goldman line about how, you know, Hollywood is a town where nobody knows anything, because, you know, how you've got a film which is essentially critiquing that type of form of capitalism, and then you've got a studio which is then going out doing as many deals as it can with other companies to kind of you know, expand the amount of money they can make off of this film.
Well, it worked, because I remember as a kid growing up wanting to go to Burger King more than McDonald's, because Burger King had the better toys. And one of those toys, like you said, was the Small Soldiers line. And I really feel like growing up, I had the one, I don't remember his name, but the guy, the Gorgonite, with essentially a boulder strapped to his hand.
Oh,
I'm fairly certain I had that toy growing up. And my cousin had the Insaniac one, or the one that's like just a total Looney Tune of a character, essentially the Tasmanian Devil type. But I can remember as a kid having these toys and playing with them. So it absolutely worked as a kid. And maybe that's why I watched it so much too, because I just saw it everywhere. And I was like, well, I got to watch it too. I don't think I ever played the game. That's not ringing any bells. But yeah, the toys are just absolutely everywhere. And it makes you wonder why it doesn't really happen anymore. I mean, outside of Disney films or Star Wars or Marvel, like those big, big franchises, you don't really see tie-ins like we used to. Like, it's just, if it's not those three, if it's not Disney, Star Wars, or Marvel, or I should say comic book films in general because of DC, but if it's not those three, you don't really see it. And you don't see it advertised to children through, like, toys at a drive-in or a drive-through anymore.
Yeah, you don't seem to see those things don't get those tie-in deals like they used to in the past. So, interesting how the sort of world of movie marketing and just marketing in general has kind of moved on in the intervening quarter of a century since this film came out. But talking of other things that have moved on over the last 25 years, and that's the world of special effects that never stands still. And I have to say, watching this film, I was kind of very pleasantly surprised by how good the special effects were in this film. I mean, it is a combination of puppetry, models, and CGI, and I actually think they blend together really well. And as you know, I think obviously this was when this film came out, it was still sort of pretty early days, really, in the kind of exploitation of CGI. But, you know, I think you could easily expect it to look a lot rougher. But for me, this film and that aspect of it looks great.
I'm with you. I was very surprised myself going into this. I'm like, man, I wonder how this is going to look. And like you said, the combination of the two, it works really well. And some of the times when it's the CGI, I would think to myself, like, man, it looks a little like waxy. But then again, I'm like, it's a plastic toy. Like, it is supposed to look kind of waxy and supposed to look fake to an extent. But how they pull off all the motions and the movements and everything, like it like you said, it works really well. And it doesn't look terrible. Like, I would say this is like a 7.5, 8 out of 10 as far as CGI work goes. And the only thing that would change that is, and this is going to be with any kind of CGI work, is just the lighting always looks weird. Like, the color and the lighting always looks off the slightest bit. But no, it still looks really, really good for being a film that's, you know, 25 years old. Wow, yeah. 25 years old.
You know what? I think that's a very good point. I think the fact that they are toys means that you are sort of more forgiving as to the kind of, yeah, what you said is the waxiness of their appearance. And, you know, they're toys, so they're going to walk a little bit sort of jerkily, aren't they? So mm-hmm. as they would do, because they're plastic toys. So I think that I think that definitely probably factors into fact that it stands up, is that actually your expectations of what they're going to look like, how they're going to move are perhaps sort of tempered by that. So anyway, I kind of think we should probably take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
John D'Angelo has lived in the same neighborhood all his life. He remembers when it was a nice, safe place to live, where all the families knew each other and everyone felt secure. But for the last few years, John D'Angelo has been watching his neighborhood change.
You know, I don't want you walking home alone.
From the kind of place you'd want to raise a family to a dangerous, crime-infested battlefield.
Stay there!
Now, thieves and drug dealers, beware, because John D'Angelo is declaring his own personal war.
Oh, you're real tough, huh?
Hey, look, but we don't need people like you in the neighborhood.
John, you cannot go around shooting up bars.
What do you want?
Well, I
want
to be safe. I want my family to be safe.
Look, we understand how you feel. We know what
you understand nothing.
John, you're crazy. This is a police matter.
Hey, Superman.
Go home.
Look, this thing is bigger than what the police can do.
John D'Angelo is a decent man. But he's fed up. Enough is enough. If the police can't protect his family, he'll do it himself by fighting back.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs towards the end of the film when the commando elite lay siege to the house where the humans and Gorgonites are holed up. The toy soldiers lead an assault on the house, during which Chip Hazard takes to the controls of a toy helicopter. As he buzzes about the house, two of the Gorgonites fire a nail gun at the copter. When it's hit by some of the metal missiles, the damaged chopper spins out of control into a satellite dish and explodes. So, Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
When I started the movie, I'm trying to, like, in my head run through, right? And I'm like, when was there a helicopter in the movie? And then I thought to myself, is this going to be a shadow conspiracy kind of situation where all of a sudden this toy helicopter shows up? And as soon as Alan's up on that power pole and heard the whirring, I'm like, here we go. And then out he comes in this little model helicopter. But it works for what it is. It looks really good. It's just like a step up or two from an ornithopter kind of thing, because the way he's got his controls set up. But the way he's able to kind of eject himself out of that is really cool. But then the explosion, like, it's just right. It's not over the top. It's not underwhelming. It's just a perfect boom. Here's a fireball, which we get a nice little whirl on the way down to. But it's just a nice fireball, and then we're back in the action. There's no, like, huge pause because that's, like, the big set piece kind of thing. Like, it's just the right amount of explosion, and I dug it.
Well, I really enjoyed it as well. So the as part of this helicopter sequence, there's a sort of very overt Apocalypse Now homage as part of this with the music cues and I love the smell of polyurethane in the morning line that Chip Hazard gets. And yeah, we get to see a very enjoyable sort of aerial sequence where Chip Hazard, he's flying around the inside of the house, I think, initially kind of like terrorizing some of the inhabitants. Then he comes back outside for a bit of aerial combat, and that's when he gets taken down by some of the Gorgonites with the nail gun. And yes, we get to see a model / toy helicopter explode. As you've already mentioned too, this is not a unique cinematic moment. The film Shadow Conspiracy, which we have reviewed previously on the Exploding Helicopter podcast, also features a exploding toy helicopter. But there is another film which also features exploding toy helicopter, and that is a 1980s action film starring Fred the Hammer Williamson called The Kill Reflex. And I think you would really enjoy that particular exploding helicopter, Nick, because it features sort of in a pastiche of Sergio Leone's films. We see Fred the Hammer Williamson kind of going into a sort of, as I say, Leone style sort of gunfight showdown with this exploding toy helicopter, which is pursuing him. So we see his hand hovering over his over the gun and his gun belt, close, you know, big close ups of the eyes before then they move to the draw. And you know, can't spoil it on a podcast called Exploding Helicopter. Obviously, Fred the Hammer Williamson shoots the helicopter down where it explodes. So this is pretty unique. Only one of three films with an exploding toy helicopter in.
And they seem to be in great company, too, with films like The Kill Reflex and Shadow Conspiracy.
Well, they're all winners.
They are. Shadow Conspiracy came out the year before, right? 97 to 98.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe someone took some inspiration.
Could be. I think The Kill Reflex came out in something like 88, 87, okay. I think. Maybe might be as late as 91, but what a time to be alive, that sort of 97, 98, all these films coming out in theaters featuring toy exploding helicopters.
We're
living in dark times now, aren't we? We're being deprived of that particular pleasure in more recent times.
Yeah,
it's a positive drought of those type of films.
Yeah, all the Ant-Man films, and there's not a toy helicopter exploding there. Like, get out of here.
Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Nick, thanks for joining me once again. Do you want to take a moment to plug anything you've got going on at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take a second to plug the Lyrical Innuendo podcast. Each episode, Bubba Wheat and myself, we're going to listen to a song. We're going to examine its lyrics and determine whether it's about sex, drugs, or good old-fashioned rock and roll. You can find it on Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website, explodinghelicopter.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and if you can help spread the word about what we do, that'd be greatly appreciated. We'll be back soon, but until then, what should people do, Nick?
Keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Sir, don't you think that's a bit violent?
Exactly. So don't call it violence. Call it action. Kids love action. It sells. Besides, what are you worried about? They're only toys.